The WLEW, News and Public Affairs Department, now presents What Do You Think? Here is your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. It is currently about 11 minutes past 10 o'clock. Our guest in the studio today is Ethel Ruprecht. She is going to be presenting the history of all Huron County country schools at the Bad Axe Log Cabins in the city of Bad Axe this coming weekend, September 24th and 25th, from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. those days. She's got a lot of information about how many schools there were out there and where they've all gone, and a little lot on how the lives of students and teachers back then were. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
A little background. How many of these schools did we have in Huron County?
About 128.
And that is because they had to be within walking distance for students, because
yes,
there were no buses. Families may have had a horse and a sleigh or a carriage or something, but that was about the only way, and you needed good roads to get them on the road.
Yes. Most of the kids in the early 1800s walked the trails of the deer and the animals.
And the Indians. And most of that took place up by Harbor Beach, Port Hope, and around to Caseville, over the water. And there were not 128 schools all at once, but I have found 128.
So some came into play, and then if the little community there kind of split up into other directions, that one kind of dissipated, and then others had to pop up wherever they went. And at first, was this basically because Huron County was logging for a long time, up until the Great Fire that took a lot of it away, but was logging what really started bringing families to the area?
Yes, and that's why most of the schools that are the oldest schools are up around the lake, because when the logging companies moved out, they were always by a stream to float them out to the lake. They were picked up mostly at Port Crescent, and sand also was mined in Port Crescent, and it was all shipped down to Bay City and Saginaw and on down.
We were a resource at the time. Lots of lumber and lots of sand.
And also they had a lot of apples. There is still a lot of apple trees up around. If you take a ride from Harbor Beach and just go slow all the way around to Port Austin, you'll see a lot of apple trees on the side. And them apple trees were somebody's apple trees. They're domesticated apples. They're...
So when the land was cleared, it allowed for the fruit trees to come in, and there was a good environment there. Weather conditions were right, soil conditions were right, and these types of things thrived.
Yeah. Especially apples. The 1875 plat book that I have shows the actual little apple on the property where there was big orchards.
And families needed this for income. I mean, you weren't selling wheat, you weren't selling corn, you grow what you needed for yourself, and maybe for your neighbors to trade with, but a lot of the huge exporting we do today, that wasn't there. You had to meet your own needs at the time.
Now, in the early 1800s, if you had one or two cattle for your family, that would probably be all that was in Huron County. I counted the barns in 1875, and there was hardly any barns in Huron County, but there were a lot of salt wells, and they were all over, and I found a lot of them in Meade Township, where I was born.
And what did they do with the salt wells?
They bring up the brine, and then what we see as those big black pots, there's one at the Bad Axe Park, they boil that down with open fire, boil it down to salt, and then that gets shipped out.
And salt was a big commodity.
Well, it was a big commodity.
We don't think of it today because you go to the store and buy it, but in its day, It was valuable, and it was a real resource to have, because we were far from the ocean where you could boil salt water to get salt and get sea salt. But inside the interior of the U.S., you either had to find like a mine that had already salt crystals in it, or you had to make it this way.
Yeah.
And this way you knew the quality, because you knew the people making it.
And Port Hope is a good example. If anybody has been going to Port Hope, you'll see that big chimney there by the water, by their park, by the pavilion. That's where they did a lot of rendering, but the building part is gone, but the chimney is still there. But a lot of it was shipped out right there.
Well, you're going to be talking about schools, so we can kind of get back to some of this stuff. You're like the History Channel on steroids here. You're just giving me all this stuff. But we only have a couple of the schools left in the area. We lost one recently. The Kipper School closed at the beginning of this school year. How many do we have left?
Five. We have Big Bernie, Church, Adams, Eccles, and Verona. And Adams just closed this year.
Oh, as well. So
they were unable to go around long. They do have a three-year period to lay dormant. And then if they can get enough money, taxpayers and whatnot, good teachers and kids, because it takes the children, they can come back and give it another try. But they opt not to. They were down low a couple years ago with only nine. And so they decided not to.
And for the small area and bigger farms these days, it's a little hard in a 4-square-mile area to get enough kids to propagate a school. I know a lot of them were schools of choice.
Yeah.
People were bringing their kids there because they wanted them to experience the little one-room schoolhouse type of...
That brings me to attention that the schools don't have special education teachers like they used to. We do have the Learning Center, thank goodness, but most of these challenged children go to the country schools because they're going to get one-on-one, and the other children, like the 7th and 8th graders, help them an awful lot in their reading and math.
And I would think, though, like the one-room type schoolhouses where you have the multi-generation, you know, the younger, the older kids and that, it allows for kids to learn more at their own pace, which would be good for special needs children because, you know, if they're a little slower, they're not being held back with a full class, you know, they just continue working with what they know, because you only have maybe one or two kids your age in the school at the most. Okay. When were most of these schools built? I know the ones that are here now certainly don't date back to the 1800s. Buildings just don't last that long, and they got to be modern for today's kids. But when did this all start? Did this really start with the logging people?
Yes, definitely with the logging people. And when the land was all logged, and it was always by a stream, a fast stream. And when the loggers cleared the land, and then they moved on to different areas, then the establishments, the people that were around, even some of the loggers stayed and had their families. And they cleared the land and put their crops in. And most of it was like squash, pumpkins, and potatoes, and apples, and so on like that. And then each logging company built one big mess hall. And that was to get warm, and they slept in tents. And so when they moved out, then they used that as the school and until they got established, and then they built their own homes.
Now today, if we were thinking of being loggers, you know, and going into such a really, you know, tough area without roads or stuff, you would think of coming alone, but these people brought their families with them, or did they get families once they got here?
Both. Some of the loggers that were single, they logged, you know, a long time, and they decided that there was time to settle down, and they knew how to work the logs, cut them, you know, and whatnot, and so they stayed, and that's where they generated their families.
And while they weren't the very first in Huron County, because that goes back to Native Americans, but they were one of the pioneer settlers of our area. And did all this change with the Great Fire? I mean, logging was so big, and then we had the Great Fire, and we lost so much timber in that.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of that timber went down in the hurricane. You know, there's always a hurricane where there's big fires, like out in California right now. And the logs still were good. And we had a lot of beech wood, beech trees, and it's very hard. It doesn't have any bark on it, so they didn't have to work as hard. And so they went to work, and they built their community with those logs.
And then the pathways and the Indian trails eventually became roads, and eventually we started getting the actual grid system of roads we have that we think of today as a road system. For them, it started off as trails that were, you know, hard for us probably to figure out, oh, is this still on the trail? But they knew where they were.
Okay. When you're driving to Harbor Beach, you're going to make a right-hand turn south. And if you drive slow enough and take careful view, you will see the ridge that the Indians and the loggers used, and it's a high bluff, and it will go for maybe a couple miles. Then the farmers have narrowed it down now. But right out of town, you're going to see that high bluff, and that was the first Indian trails and people trails for the schools and for the making of Harbor Beach.
Yeah, I always remember that because we had some big storms when I came up here first few years when we had real winters, and I remember the snow went over that bluff, and they had to actually truck the snow out because they couldn't plow it anymore. They had nowhere to push it, and it was because of that bluff, and it had nowhere to put it. But that was a key starting point.
Yeah, and that is wrote in our book on 150th Sesquicentennial, and the people that the authors that wrote about Harbor Beach talked about that.
Now, teachers had to come for these schools because you're not necessarily going to find someone in the community who has the ability to teach, and maybe you don't want to teach your own kids because that just seems like it's fraught with problems and people thinking you're being favorites and everything else. So they had to bring teachers in. Was this something difficult to do in a really remote area?
They didn't bring teachers in. The parents took turns teaching the children.
Really?
Yes.
That's how it
you
started.
Did not have to have a certificate. If you were strong in math from your childhood, then you taught math. But they took turns teaching the children, and a lot of it was taught at home.
And did they have to get textbooks that we think of today, or was it mainly like chalkboard and this is how it's done, and learn it, kids?
Well, at first they wrote on... Now, I'm talking early, okay?
They're not petroglyphs like it's
no,
Santa Lac County,
I'm coming to that year. But in the early log cabin days, they wrote on, it's a tree. It's a tree with the white bark on.
Oh, the birch?
Is it a birch tree?
They use birch paper from the trees?
Yes, that's what they wrote on. Because you could strip it off in big strips a certain time of the year.
Without killing and girding the tree.
Yeah. And there is a limestone that you can use for chalk on something that's dark. But there's two kinds of boards. There was the slate board, which came later. And the early boards, I've only seen one school, and it was in Tuscola in Frankenmuth. It's the Hart School, and it is a museum now. They put together 12-inch boards and sanded them down, or took the some type of a sandstone and made it as smooth as they could and put layers and layers of black paint on it, real shiny paint, and that is what they use for chalkboards. And that is the only school that I found that.
But they had to be innovative. They had to work with what they had.
Yep.
There wasn't, let's just order it on Amazon and get it in 2 days. They had to think, and they had to be resourceful and a little bit creative.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the moms and parents helped with what they could. When did it eventually turn over to being teachers?
Probably in I'm going to say our school was built, the Riverdale School on the Penapug-Fillion Road, was built in 1894. And we had chalkboards then, so it had to be before that. But I had no history of a timeline.
But there must have been a point when, say, the state said you had to have a certain qualification to teach.
And it was,
they wanted standards. They wanted to make sure that kids could read and write properly and graduate if they were going to go to a university.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when teachers with a little more background in it, not necessarily what we require today,
right,
but enough to be a scholarly person. And did they then bring their own books along, or was that something eventually that the parents had to have shipped in if they needed the books for a certain class?
Okay, this was very interesting. I found this information in the 1800s in the Gore School, and you could only have one female dog, but you could have two male dogs, and that's all you could have on the farm because the cattle and the sheep roam freely, no fences. It's all stone up there. okay, they had to pay $1 a year for a license for a dog. That money was to be used for the library and for school books. At that time, school books were only a quarter. So if the whole township had a dog,
that would add it up pretty good.
That would generate the books.
And I imagine they lasted longer. I think people took care of things
better in those
days. When the kids took the books home, they kind of cherished that they had something there that was worth something.
Yeah, and when I read the literature out of the township halls, they were so happy to get one book a year in their school. The rest went for their textbooks.
How many kids were in these smaller schools? Is this something that, you know, we kind of think of it as, you know, maybe 6 or 8 today or 9, you know, and they're closing them at 9. How many did they have back then?
In my history that I have found, it's different in each township. The Hayes Methodist Church, Hayes little community, was quite a good community at one time. And
they
had first
strawberry social every year.
Yes. And they had a log school that you had to bend down to get in. And after she, the teacher, got done teaching 8 students for the day, she had the Indians come in and she taught the Indians English.
Oh.
And the only book that she used was the Bible. There was reading, there was numbers for the verses in the Bible. She learned how to add those, and it was basically English, reading, and math.
And we did help teach the indigenous people.
Yes,
here.
We did.
That's
the only place I've seen it.
I never would have thought that here. I would have thought, you know, you did this for your kids.
They had a reservation on the river there by the Hayes church. And they had a killing there. But we'll wait till we get to that part.
But I mean, and what was it, really just a one-room schoolhouse? Or did they separate them a little bit? Or was there an office for the teacher maybe or other things in there? We think of it as one room, maybe a wood stove in the back in the old little house on the prairie type of thing. But what did they really look like?
One room.
They were just one room.
And they were different sizes, and they were always later on. Okay, we're moving up.
Mm.
They were on 1 acre of property, and it was usually on a corner so that it would be centrally located for everybody to walk within a mile, and sometimes 2, but mostly just a mile.
So it would be like at a crossroads, so they could come from 4 different directions
exactly.
to the school.
Exactly. And I come across probably 5 schools in Huron County that had 2 of them. And one is usually, one was the Farmer's Hall. I think everybody was familiar with that. We had weddings. That had a basement, and it had an upstairs and a level. And then they had taught on the main floor, and then they had another level to play in the wintertime. And this one that I gave you here, Brookfield number 1, that was 2. And the Grace School over by Paris, that had 2 schools hooked together. But other than that, there were 1 room.
And simply 1 room, which means there was
no office.
There was an outhouse or something for the kids to but that's all they had at home, really, too.
Right.
It wasn't uncommon at home. And
no water.
You had to bring your own?
Every school, not every school. Most of the schools had a well and a pump, you know, like the farm pump or the home pump.
But no indoor plumbing.
No plumbing in the inside. And
imagine in the winter, that would be hard to even get a pump going because they could freeze as well or be buried in snow or everything else that goes with it.
There was 2 wells that I want to talk about. One was North Verona. And that was on Helms and Richardson. And they had a submerged well. And they just had a small pump on top, very small. And so that it didn't freeze up in the wintertime, they built a cement four cement walls around it about, well, it's up to my chin, so I'm going to say 4 foot high. Maybe 4 foot high by maybe 5 foot, and they filled that with water. So all they had, it was deep enough where all they had to do is break the ice and then reach down and get their water. But that was very unusual, and the cement is still there. That box is still there.
And these were all shallow wells, hand dug.
There wasn't
any drilling equipment to do this. You had to find a good spot where you had good ground where you could actually dig and wasn't full of rocks. And then you had to find a place where there's going to be a water level that isn't going to be so far down that you don't want to dig it.
Now over there the water table is really high, so they didn't have to dig very far. Plus our water was better, even if it was shallow, it was better. Now without all the farms, you know. And then the other one was the Martin School. Excuse me. It was right across the road from the Verona Cemetery. It was just a little school there. They had never had running water. And to the south of them, immediately, there was a high hill. And there was two farmhouses, one on both sides. And every day, two children took turn, and they had a stick, good size stick with a notch in it, and they put the pail on and they walked up that hill. It was kind of like Jack and Jill, but I think this instant Jill pushed Jack down. No, just teasing. Anyway, the one farm said, no, I'm not going to give you any water. I don't want my well to run dry.
Because you had to be concerned about that with shallow
Absolutely.
Wells.
If you
had a real drought summer or whatever, you know, and it wasn't filling back up the water table, you might have to dig further to try and get to water again, and you needed that.
Now, we're only talking about one pail.
Well.
The other farmer on the other side said, you can have all you want. So they went every day, two kids, no matter what the weather was. And they went up and got that pail, brought it down. Now, that water was used for drinking. One long-hand dipper was used by all. They all got the same illnesses together.
And there were no immunizations back there either, so I'm sure what went around came around.
Yeah, and they also used it to wash their hands, line up, and somebody would pour the water very, very stingy.
Sparingly.
Oh, yes, they didn't use very much water. And they would wash their hands, and then someone would hand them one sheet of towel.
And this was winter, summer, and maybe when it got back there was already ice on the top of the bucket, and you let it sit in the building for a little while till it thawed.
I don't know.
I would think. But you know, by the time two kids come down a hill with a bucket of water, I would think there'd be a chance for it to freeze.
It would be upper grade. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. A lot of things kids take for granted today being in school that they had to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And there were no snow days either.
No. No.
No getting that message, oh, I don't have to go in today. I'm going to roll over and go back to sleep or whatever.
And we loved when it sleeted. We all ice skated to school. I remember putting my shoes over my shoulder, putting my ice skates on. Everybody ice skated those days. And we ice skated on the gravel road, hoping you didn't hit a stone, and went to school. And the snow was no different. In the year of 1947 was the big snowstorm in Huron County. And the snow built up to the top of the telephone poles. And when I was walking to school, I remember patting the top of the pole, and it was only sticking out about 8 inches. And we had to wait 3 or 4 days for a snowblower to come and plow some of the roads out from Bay City.
But still the kids got dressed,
got their books,
and whether mom and dad had a sleigh or something to get you there, or if it was too deep and the horses might get stuck, then you just walked and you made it to school and back.
Yeah, there
was no cell phones. Call me when you get there. We know you got there. None of this stuff was there that we take for granted today.
Yeah, we never had no phone in our school, and there was a several times that the neighbor, they were a lot older, you know, and they had a horse, and they had it wasn't a cutter, it was a sleigh for logging. It had the two sections of rudders, wood, and he went by and picked us all up, and he had blankets on, old army blankets, and we covered up with them blankets, and we went to school.
But that was when it was a community was a community, and
yeah,
everybody
family.
Had to pull for everybody else, because you didn't know if tomorrow you needed them to help you. in that situation. I mean, they had to be closer to survive.
Yeah. The people in Meade Township that basically went to the Riverdale School only, I think, because I don't know.
I keep thinking of Archie and Jughead when you say Riverdale School.
Oh, okay.
it's just my brain going in the wrong ways, but okay.
The school was by a river. And anyway, I don't know who built this, but it probably was during wartime. They built a root cellar. Do you know what a root cellar is?
Yeah, okay, there's. Ossentoskis
have one
we
down
didn't
here.
Have you know refrigerator canning and a lot of jars and stuff. People had to put the root vegetables and stuff into a place that was kind of climate controlled, had the right temperature and humidity and stuff, so they'd have these vegetables until spring when they had more food.
And no money. My dad grew 4 acres of potatoes. Somebody grew pumpkins, somebody grew squash, onions, and whatnot. And this root cellar was huge, big enough to drive a semi down in. And it was, it was blocked off with cement columns, and it had a dirt floor, and it had a double door on the front, and then there was grass all over the top. And we grew potatoes. You did not buy nothing. It was all bartered. You want a bag of potatoes, I'll give you a bag of squash, whatnot. And that went on for years and years until it just fell in.
And this is the same type of technology they used for saving ice. Mm-hmm. Is you'd have an underground storage area. It still was a little above freezing, but if you put enough ice in there over the winter, you had ice until it cooled off again in the fall.
It was cold, the same temperature all the time because there was so much dirt on it. It was made out of cement.
Plus the insulative quality of the dirt above it. Mm-hmm. Plus, if anyone knows, you go into your basement, it's cooler than the upstairs usually because the ground holds the temperature a lot more than the, than the upper area does.
And you want to see a mini mini one, the Ossentoski home over on South Bad Axe Road on the right as you turn down to go to the fairgrounds. They have a small one. And
that's
exact.
Mound with
yes.
The doors on it,
yes.
The Central Dispatch
yep.
Right there.
And they still use that.
If it works, it works.
Yeah, I asked Lauren.
Okay. What grades did the kids go to school in at the school?
Good question.
Because we think of, you know, getting towards college prep with senior year. The smaller schools in our area generally go to eighth grade, and then they go to the other bigger schools to finish off high school. How far did they go? Did they just go far enough to where they learned enough that they could manage math and stuff to do their work and survive, or was there more to it?
Most of the education on farm work is done at home. That's where they created jobs for them when they went out. That is a good question. I spent a lot of time on the grades in school. And when the children went to school, like I started when I was 4. You could start when you was 4 that time. If you kind of qualified and your other siblings were going, you could start at 4. And of course, they were kindergarten through 8th. But when they were old enough to work on the farm and springtime came, they were let out of school to go home and work on the crops or in the fall, and then they came back to pick that up. So sometimes they didn't graduate until they were like 18 years old out of the 8th grade. Now, when they become...
They didn't have September to June. Because they needed the fall,
they needed
the spring for planting, they needed the fall for harvest, and there wasn't a lot of options. The family needed you, you're here.
Mm-hmm.
So you only went like 6 months, you say?
Six and sometimes 9, but mostly 6 months.
But the winter time is when there wasn't quite as much work. There's still work on a farm any time of the year, but as far as the major harvesting and planting and plowing, all of that, those seasons were set aside so the kids would be available because they were your help.
Yep.
They didn't, you know, oh, we have a hired hand and I'm going to sit in the house and play video games.
Mm-hmm.
None of that. You worked.
Yeah, and after, even when they were, let's say that they're coming back to school when they're 18. Well, some of these boys went off to war. And after the war, they came back even at 29 years old and went to school and finished out to the 8th grade. Did a recap.
Well, they may have seen, though, how important education is when they're outside of this part of the world to the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And boys and girls, sometimes we were a little more sexist in the old days, and you know, we kind of, you know, you were mentioning to me before the thing that teachers, when they came in, couldn't even have a boyfriend. That was a dismissal type of an offense.
That went for all the schools in Heron County. No boyfriend. And if you got married or had a boyfriend, you're fired right then. You didn't go to school the next day.
And the reason was they thought you weren't going to be thinking of their kids any longer? Or
you know, they didn't say anything in the history about what goes on after you get married, but I'm sure they thought, well, if you're going to have a family, you're not going to be able to teach.
But you're going to have a place for your kids to learn if you're a family, if you're going to be part of this community.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay, the teach.
But again, it was a different era.
Yeah.
And things were thought of differently.
The teachers probably only got, it differed. And for 6 months, they only got $20 a month. And then they got room and board, the nearest farmhouse, so that they could walk to school, because they didn't. Not all of them had cars. And they considered that board. And then when they had cars, they would eat and sleep at night, you know, and do their homework and whatever. And then they would take their children to work with them in the car so that they would have a ride to school. It was like bartering back and forth.
Was it always women? Were there no male teachers at that time?
There was male teachers, and they didn't talk about if they were getting married or not. They only talked about the women.
The double standard came in.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it
was
better.
Yeah, I just didn't
it's
come
just
across
it. It's
just
the way it was back then. There were a lot of different values and mores out there that we don't hold true today.
And I didn't tell you this, but all teachers had to double petticoat themselves. They
even
wore long.
Guys? Even the guys?
No, women. Petticoat. You know what a petticoat
yes,
is, don't you?
I
okay,
know.
It's a half slip. They had to wear two half slips under their long skirt, and the skirt had to be within 4 inches of the floor. For what reason, I don't know, but I read it a lot.
Well, I imagine somebody came up with standards, and like they do today in townships, the next township adopts, you know, that looks good, we'll start with that. And I imagine the schools did the same thing around here. That school over in that little community has these standards. We're creating a school, we'll start with what they have and see what works, and it never gets changed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that was weird. But then again, double petticoat might be nice on those cold days when you're walking in the snow to school.
The schools were absolutely warm. No one ever got cold. The floors, we went barefooted, you know, the floors were warm. The stoves differ. We did not have a pot belly stove, but that was the common thing, and they put it in the middle of the school, and if they put it over in the corner, they would run a pipe all the way across the ceiling to the back where the chimney was, so that that pipe heated the whole school.
Ah. Again, being innovative, being clever
mm-hmm.
with what they had. We're getting a little short on time here. I do want to talk about your time coming up at the log cabins.
Okay.
Are you going to have a couple of presentations, or is it going to be just you and you're there and you're
just
a resource? Everybody can talk to you and find out what they ever wanted to know about little schools in the area.
Okay. If anybody has any photos that they'd like to share with me, I have my own copier.
And you can get them back to them, because they're probably treasures to them.
Right.
But it can become a permanent part of history of the county schools, and that way it's not lost.
Exactly. I usually give them something back with their photo, and I send it overnight mail, the fast mail. And I have not lost a picture yet in 15 to 25 years, okay? And I'm still taking them. And I have 160 pounds... of school information and over 7,000 pages of pictures and information, and I will help them. Just have to come and make sure and tell me what school they went to.
And you were saying before we got into this that you may be a resource. If they have a picture, you might, through all the studying you've done, might be able to pinpoint what one or two of these people in the picture, because a lot of times when you get things from your parents and you see the picture and, oh, that's wonderful, and you look on the back and there's no notations, you have no idea who these people are,
yeah,
or what this was all about, you may be able to help them with that. It may,
yeah,
not,
but, I do.
But you are a resource they could try.
Yeah, a lot of, we do a lot of genealogy. We just did a couple from Utah, and three generations came up to find their grandfather. And they had lost him for years. He was born in 1881, and I found him in the Eccles School. And they wrote a book on it, and I just got it not too long ago. And three generations drove here to meet me and to go in the Eccles School. And Ann Kennedy was just thrilled. She's just loves the genealogy anyway, and especially her school, you know, and gave her.
But they had to know that Eccles School wasn't the one exactly that they're, because they've had to be renovated and such since then. It couldn't be that old. And
in this instance, it was the school.
It's the actual building yet?
Actually building, and it's still open.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is incredible.
And that and
that's a testament to how well they built it.
Yeah.
Because not a lot lasts that long.
Yeah, and I didn't talk about the three different schools, and I'm going to do it real quickly.
Okay.
There's three different schools. One was the log. One was called the board school. The boards are taken out of the sawmill that are down by the water, and they run up and down. And the reason that they're from the roof down to the bottom is that the rain drips off of the slate roof and doesn't sit on them boards, so they rot. So therefore, they last forever, and they're all either hard pine, beech, or oak, and they just recover them later on with siding or brick. And that's why they're used for houses today, because the foundation is so strong.
But the logs they could use way back when were old growth forest that wasn't destroyed in the fire or logged out.
Yeah.
So they had the premium stuff.
Yeah.
That was really tight grained, it really held up well.
Mm-hmm.
If people have questions, come see you on Saturday and Sunday. That would be the best way to do.
And they can call me.
269-7416 is your number. And you have all kinds of information on all the different schools. You've mentioned that there's like 128 of them, so there's got to be schools out there with names we've never heard
and there's
that are that part of history.
I think I got six schools. Excuse me. I think I got six schools that I do not have a picture for. And I'm looking for those ones.
And a lot of the old days, pictures were a premium type of thing. They you know, it wasn't until we got into the Brownie cameras and that mm-hmm. everybody was taking pictures. It was a ceremonial type of thing, weddings, important, you know, dignitaries mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. such. They aren't that common, and to find one that's good enough to use, it's got to be mm-hmm. a real treat for you.
Yeah.
But you can tell them what schools you're looking for, and then they will hopefully go home and see, well, my dad went to that, maybe I can find a picture of it.
I will.
Or grandfather. We're getting back kind of far now.
Yeah, it is.
Well, I appreciate you taking time to come out. I know you had a whole lot of information you could give us, and we just don't have time for it all. But this is something that's a passion for you, preserving the one school.
Yes.
History of our area.
In the event that Gene and I should pass away at any time, all my literature will be going to the Bad Axe Library.
To be archived and everybody
yes.
can see it and use it.
Because mm-hmm.
they have a vast amount of local history and books that mm-hmm. they have kept, and it's incredible that it's there, and it's a resource. You mentioned the people from Utah. You're a source that, you know, doesn't show up in any, you know.
I'm working on one from Niagara Falls right now.
You're sort of like a living ancestry.com here, you know.
I love it. I just love it.
Well, I hope you get a good turnout. I hope you have good weather.
Yeah, I do too.
And they can ask questions. They can tell their kids and their grandkids, see how tough we had it. We didn't have air conditioning. We didn't have, you know, running water and all this other stuff that kids today seem to take for granted.
But we had a paddle.
Yeah, they don't have that anymore.
All schools had a paddle.
Yeah, and they weren't afraid to use it.
No, you can't do it now.
Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me and sharing my information with Huron County. And thank you for you people out there that have sent me pictures and trusted me with giving them back.
And again, she's going to be, Ethel Ruprecht, is going to be at the log cabins in the Bad Axe Village, just south of the library behind the Huron County Courthouse, September 24th and 25th, 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. each day. She's there. You can talk to her about the history of all the schools. She'll have some literature and stuff there that she's got that she can show you certain things. And maybe you two can connect and you have some history to share with her.
I hope so.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll clue you in on all the latest in the news. Again, our guest today has been Ethel Ruprecht. She's got the history of all Huron County country schools coming up this weekend in Bad Axe.
Thank you.